Hey, Crit Nation, we are one step closer to our upcoming Kickstarter, now named Capes and Crooks. If you're interested in bringing superhero experience to your 5th edition campaign setting, you can follow us at critacademy.com/capesandcrooks. You can sign up there and get notified when our Kickstarter goes live, or you can head on over to youtube.com and watch some of our live streams as we playtest some of the content that we've already developed for the upcoming RPG. Keep your blade sharp and spells prepared, heroes. Hello and welcome, heroes, to the Crit Academy. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Austin.
And I'm your co-host, Ian.
This podcast was created to provide you, our heroes, with new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
We hope to inspire you with creative content that you can bring with you on your next adventure.
Thank you for joining us here at Crit Academy Studios, where everything's made up and your roles don't matter.
Yep, that's right. Heroes are like an arena without any gladiators. Which, then what is it filled with? Lions?
Which moves us to our main topic. Yeah, 5 tips for running gladiator arenas. I'm looking forward to it. Justin's looking forward to it. I know Austin is, too.
I like fighting.
But first, before we all that, as usual, we have a giveaway.
Yeah, that's right. Our gift giveaway is A Night of Fright from Stephen Pankotai and Sadie Lowry. Jinkies! Aldrin Beauregard is dead, and he's left 1 million gold to anyone who could survive the night in his haunted mansion. But spooky things are going on, and nothing is as it seems. Luckily, Mystery LLC is on the case. And our winner today is Ozken M10. And if you didn't win, no problem. Just head over to CritAcademy.com and subscribe for your chance to win. It's really easy and it's free.
Yes. Oh man, what an exciting topic today. The chanting of the crowds, the stench of sweat, blood, and fear, and the howls of the dying fill the arenas of Dungeons & Dragons World. Those with courage to step on the field can find fame and fortune or brutal defeat. Death looks on in hunger, waiting to snatch another soul from crimson sands to feed its dark mistress. In the face of doom, the gladiators fight time and again to test their might against their rivals and against terrible beasts thirsty for the spray of hot blood. Such contests are stuff of legend, worthy of bold adventurers and fortune seekers. I'm really excited for this episode, and it has nothing to do with the fact that the Mortal Kombat Red Band trailer was awesome, but it might have been part of the inspiration for this. So today, we're going to be giving you tips for running exciting, fun, gladiatorial matches from behind the screen, giving you everything you need to send your players into the arena to either claim victory or defeat. Oh, man. How does this sound to you guys?
I'm so stoked for this. I love just arena fighting. Even in, like, fiction, it's always just such a good time.
Yeah, and I feel like it is one of those things that's a little harder to get right, because it can easily boil down to, I hit, you hit. So hopefully we'll have a little bit of insight here for our viewers and can give them some direction to ensure that theirs is memorable.
And our first one is actually going to be one of the tips, is arena competitions. Now, a combat in an arena is still combat. One or more characters square off against a foe or foes. Both sides roll initiative, and both sides take turns using good tactics and spectacular powers to defeat the enemy. Yet, important differences exist too. An arena encounter is a controlled environment. It doesn't, usually, spill beyond the battlefield's parameters. Since most characters fighting in an arena aren't likely to have more than one match in a single day, the arena combat can and does eat up more resources than does a normal combat encounter. Add to this the presence of the crowd, the sheer variety of opponents, and the rewards of fame, gold, baubles, and the gladiatorial contest evolves into something more than a simple fight between the good and the bad. It becomes a contest of blood and glory.
And staying alive.
And staying alive.
So, I really do think that it's important to leverage that. The arenas, we talk about adventuring day being, you know, 5 to 6 encounters a day, right? So, in an arena setting, you want to try to make that as close to that as possible. If you're only going to do one encounter, you want to make sure you're going to build up that encounter so that it drains all their resources. Expect them to blow all their big powers and everything and draw it out if you can. I think that's a big part of it, especially it mentions the parameters of the battlefield. I think that's one of the things you can have the most fun with. In one of the Patreon games I ran, the characters end up serving the being enslaved and had to fight in an arena that was being flooded with water and it had like dangerous fish, killer fish in the water and stuff. So you can really change the venue in the arena competition a lot utilizing different themes.
Okay. I could see that. I could also see, like, the fact that there is, you know, there is an edge to this arena, right? What's at the edge, right? Like, let's, is it just a pitfall? Like, there's spikes at the bottom? Or is Mortal it just a regular Kombat. Wall that, you know, you can just kind of, if you're standing against it, maybe you could be like, oh, yeah, I slammed this, just dude's head in the wall, and now, I don't know, roll for a strength check or something. I don't know, maybe he's prone into the wall or something. You could do some fun, flavorful stuff, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And I think you make good points there, especially if you can include, make it a little more magical. Maybe, you know, there's, instead of it being spikes around the outside, it's a collection of spheres of annihilation. So one of the core ways to win is to knock somebody off the arena and then they're no more. You can really...
It's just all fire elementals at the bottom.
Or sometimes maybe there's something around the arena, like some sort of like a magical dome to protect the audience too. From the combatants, ooh. Especially if they're chugging high-level spells around. I mean, it's if somebody misses, in theory, those keep going, don't they? Not on the forementioned game, but...
I like that. Like, splatter on, like, an invisible shield as somebody's body just goes... Mm-hmm. You know? Sending reverberations and stuff, and I don't know, I just... that's the arena competitions in the environment are something you really want to play with.
For sure.
Austin or Ian, do you want to tell us about arena encounters and we'll talk about the different types?
Of course. And also during this competition, you're going to have various types of encounters. Like, that is the entire point of arena combat in the first place. I mean, the match in the arena comes in a variety of forms. And the first one we're going to talk about are duels. A duel pits one opponent against another, which can occur in any venue from fighting pits to a coliseum. And any hazard trips threaten both foes. The larger the venue, the more important the duel needs to attract a crowd. Duels in large venues feature famous gladiators, terrifying monsters, interesting gimmicks, or all the above, or a combination of. Since only two combatants are involved, only one player gets to participate. Because of this, the first trip is done towards duel-style arenas, and probably the most simple, arguably.
Right, yeah, you know, during the duels and other gladiatorial arena matches, there are players that are unable to participate either due to death or the encounter setup, in this case a duel, you can allow them to run the monsters, the traps, the hazards, or even weapons such as, you know, catapults that are lobbing onto the field. Not only does this make for, you know, great mechanics, but also a dynamic and dynamic encounters and require a little more strategy on the player's part. Making it unpredictable even to the dungeon master, because if you're putting other players in charge of some of those things, you don't really know what they're going to do or how they're going to behave.
Also takes a lot of the workload off the dungeon master, which is always helpful as well.
Mm-hmm. And I think what Ian said, it really makes a big deal, is the inclusion of unique hazards, unique monsters. I mean, the idea of a single person in a one-on-one match doesn't sound all that engaging. But if you put it to where that one person is versing a beholder in an area where they can be, beholder's a bad example. Because I want something that they don't have a knockback. Something with some sort of knockback, like a giant, that when it hits them, it sends them flying, and then putting traps everywhere where it's basically trying to baseball swing them into like the hazards and everything makes that one-on-one match more engaging. Likewise, if there's spikes that are intermittently coming out of the ground, luring a hill giant who's big and dumb into those areas can become more effective than just, you know, getting your sling and launching it at the bastard.
Right.
What are some interesting gimmicks you think could fit the theme for a duel? Any guys got any ideas?
Trap doors.
Gouts of fire.
Gouts of fire. What'd you say, Ian?
Yeah.
Trap doors.
Trap doors always good.
Oh, dude, that would be hilarious. Like, because you wouldn't, nobody would know where they were at. So as you're trying to evade each other, you might open up a trap that drops you into a pit of acid or lava or spikes or something.
Mm-hmm.
Or a springboard.
I was thinking, like, what if they're fighting in, like, a labyrinth? So, like, everyone's just waiting, like, who's going to get hunted first?
That's cool.
The suspense in the air and whatnot. They could do something like that.
See, that would
maybe
be
the other
good
guy's
one.
A Minotaur. So he's a labyrinth master, and that's, like the whole point. I don't know.
No,
it could be interesting.
That's really cool because everyone up top in the stands can see what's going on.
Exactly.
I like that.
And then all the players are like, hey, can I send him a message from here? Maybe that could help.
Yeah, abilities
oh,
like
that could
that
be interesting too.
Really
like maybe they didn't know.
Go lay down, guitar.
Maybe they're not used to magic, so when they start using stuff like the message cantrip, they're telepathically like communicating to each other. That could be interesting.
That is really cool. I like that. So beyond just the one-on-one, I think that it really takes, you got to take all those kind of features in place or, ideas into play if you're going to do a duel. But the most common one I think that happens is team battles, right? Team contests, you know, feature groups of gladiators fighting against each other. These are usually best solutions for like adventuring parties since it includes, you know, the entire group and it really can play to, you know, team tactics. And it allows for far more complex and interesting encounters that way. You know, during the team matches, capitalize on the group tactics. An arena should change and evolve during the battle if you're going to have this. An example would be an arena where the floor is, you know, falling away every round into a chasm of spikes, fire, lava, whatever you have. And in that, you know, in this example, not only is the arena shrinking as the battle continues, but the danger of the hazards is growing because there's more places to knock people off of, push them back into, or, you know, dive bomb them into it with fly with like a power bomb or something. Mm-hmm. This really allows for clever positioning tactics to leverage in the teams. What were you gonna say?
I really like the idea of evolving arenas. Mm-hmm. That is something that never happens in a lot of fiction, honestly. Because normally, like, the whole idea is that it's about this one famous character fighting another famous character, and that's where all the things kind of happen. But I mean, how did the legends get created? And I imagine like something like this, where like this is a, you know, more of a hellscape arena. No one dares try it because it's so terrifying, and the risk of death is just extremely high. And you know, like there, you could, I don't know, like that, I feel like that is something that needs to be done. Now, granted, I mean, like maybe like it's a blizzard that gets more intense as it goes on. Like maybe the difficult terrain starts to, you know, happen. Maybe, I don't know, maybe you have like a unique frostbitten condition that's going on or something. Like maybe the characters are continuously getting colder until like maybe exhaustion.
Right.
I doubt that's really horrible to give somebody, but actually that's another thing. Exhaustion in gladiator fights, like if you're fighting for, you know, hours, even in fantasy settings people tend to be like, yeah, he's probably a little tired.
I think that lends itself well to, I'm a huge Final Fantasy 14 fan, and there's a battle, and I've seen this in other games where they're on a boat and, you know, it rocks back and forth. What if the arena was floating in the air and when all the weight is to one side, it tips and everyone starts to slide. So not only are you fighting each other, but as people are running and chasing each other, the entire arena tips, forcing mm-hmm. everyone else to slide in one direction, which tilts it at a bigger angle. So now it gets to the point where everyone's like, shit, I got to stop attacking this guy and try to climb back up before it turns, you know, completely sideways like a, you know, a teeter totter or something. And there's everyone, you know, falls off. And that really, would, I think that would make great because that would be a tactics thing where you could say, okay,
who's... Hey, Jimmy, we need you to stand over there.
Yeah, right. we need all the ranged people over there. Run and blast while you're running to level out the arena, you know? What do you think, Ian?
Balancing out is definitely a mechanic. You don't see stuff very often. And I was trying to run a few ways through my head of like, okay, the more guys are over here, the more squares they move as a result. And yeah, I would imagine there'd be quite a bit of paperwork on that one, and that could be pretty interesting.
Yeah, and these do take a little bit more prep than you a traditional arena, but that's the point. You want it to be epic. You want it to be memorable. And nobody's going to forget that time you were on the floating, tipsy arena, and poor Billy got slip and fell and went off into a sphere of annihilation at the bottom. You know?
That'd be really crazy.
Poor Billy.
I like that, though.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
That was pretty good. Yeah, yeah. But after team battles, we have grand melees. So a grand melee is a variation of kind of like this team contest, where in this event, the PCs are part of a large number of combatants. We're talking like hundreds, maybe. Who knows? It's a free-for-all style battle, considering that the player characters are on the same side, because obviously they kind of all enrolled together. I'm sure they wouldn't want to hurt each other. These contests can see the PCs fighting against one another, which could also be really fun. I mean, to test out your character's limits against another player characters. Right. Maybe they've always thought that would be fun and cool. This is a safe environment to do that. however, since a player can choose to knock out an enemy reduced to 0 hit points instead of killing it, PCs can participate without players fearing the loss of their cherished adventurers. Which is kind of what I was saying, but...
I mean, which makes sense, too, because actual Valtero combats didn't have as much fatality as people actually thought they did, just because gladiators were expensive to train. You don't want to lose your gladiators. And I would imagine, in this scenario, too, you don't want to lose your prize fighters, or in this case, PCs.
Mm-hmm.
Also a fun fact.
Right, right.
And tip?
Also, gladiator fights had referees, too.
And typically, I feel like gladiators, at least historically, were probably skilled enough to be like, hey, I'm not going to land this killing blow on you. That would obviously, like, kill you. You know, we're making money together in this, regardless of what happens. So,
yep.
Right.
I don't know. Maybe that makes sense. So, I could see that.
All right. And on top of that, the Grand Melee has a few other aspects to it. And it's one of the few arenas where roleplay can potentially be a lot heavier. And this... Because you could have, like, leap to battle itself, and there could, as a result, focus on role-playing to build short-term alliances with maybe not just other players or even NPCs, and politic to cut a deal like, okay, this is a really tough guy or monster in here. Like, the example is, if a party members are only level 5, and there's a fire giant on the field, which is a much higher CR, I was like, maybe we should work together to take down the big Brutus here.
Yeah.
And so, as a result, alliances may form. That could be pretty cool.
Yeah, I think that's a really big aspect of the Grand Melee format is the politicking becomes a more critical aspect because there very well may be more powerful creatures in the battle. And so the players, first of all, are going to know. It's like, Austin, is that a fire giant? Aren't we like, that's way stronger than us. Like, what are we going to do?
I'm not going to go near it. I'm going to go that way.
Right. So at that point, you're kind of forced. Okay, well, maybe it's a, okay, let's all gang up on it and deal with it. We'll make a deal to fight this giant with these three other NPCs. Mm. But then somebody else approaches you about one of those other NPCs saying, hey, look, once the fire giant's down, that guy's the next biggest threat. Why don't you help? And kind of creates this little chain of the weakers ganging up and knocking out all the bigger threats. And I think that that would make for interesting role play, especially if you include the access of like poisoning and, damaging and rigging weapons so that they break during combat, sabotaging them. There's a lot that can go into this so that people can leverage to better help themselves, to better make the combat more leveraged in their favor, I think.
And it also, like, because I imagine there's probably some low level, I mean, generally people only get to, like, around level 7 anyway, or maybe a little bit higher. I don't quite remember the numbers, but this also makes it so you can throw larger CR monsters at them, because that, which doesn't happen very often in D&D. At least in 5th edition. I don't know about previous ones, of course. But
no, it's true.
I mean, this means you could be like, hey, this, we're level 9 as a group, and we see this, it's a high CR monster, a Storm Giant. Storm Giant's pretty
sure,
high.
Sure, go with that.
You know, like, typically some level 9s aren't gonna fight a Storm Giant. That'd be ridiculous. But, I mean, Tal Gall over there, the orc who's ridiculously strong, is like, hey, we're gonna go fight this Storm Giant together because it sounds like fun glory and blood for the blood gods, and you know, it could be a fun moment for you. Now suddenly your characters are gonna like orcs, so I don't know.
I'm totally envisioning that episode, that point in Avengers where the Hulk jumps at that big, or no, it wasn't Avengers, it was Thor Ragnarok, where he jumps and attacks the big giant fire demon.
No, Hulk, no!
Like, he clearly isn't gonna have a chance, right? Snoke, Hulk, stop!
Buffered monster!
Something like that would be really cool. And I think you're right. It gives the DM an opportunity to showcase either very powerful homebrew monsters or some of the monsters in the Monster Manual that the players just never get to see. And because of the fact that it could be a team up, it makes for a great opportunity when a player does die to take on another character sheet and play a different class for a night, you know? So there's a lot of good stuff that comes there, but the one thing, and this is probably... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, that's there's been plenty of times where I've seen players take down monsters that are way higher in CR that, in theory, they should not be able to do it, but they took it down no problem. Like, I remember, like, one time in Avernus, like, when we were level 7, a Death Knight appeared, and those are what, CR 15? But we all ended up turbo killing the thing.
Yeah.
Just because we were, it's like... Yeah, this level 15 demon devil thing, but aside, we're paladins with smite, which do turbo damage to do these things.
Yeah, it was pretty in our favor.
Before he took it down.
I mean,
that's funny.
Not sure if his DM gave us some leverage on that. We're not quite sure, I suppose, but I mean,
right.
So regardless, we certainly fought it and somehow came out. So, I mean, yeah.
Was that an arcane? That wasn't an arcane fan, was it?
Was it not?
Nope.
Oh.
No. You guys allied up with the Death Knight.
Oh, yeah, we did. Game. That's right.
And all his Hell Riders.
Yeah. I didn't even think about just fighting the Death Knight. Good lord.
Well, I thought you guys were going to end up there for a little bit, but luckily, you know, you were pretty smart about it. So those kind of cover some of the different types of encounters that you can have. And maybe a few tips on how to make them really potent. But one of the things that I think easily gets overlooked is victory conditions. Change the victory conditions. Arena competitions end after one side is dead or dying usually. But this doesn't need to always be the case. Arenas feature all sorts of competitions, such as races, fights to first blood. I really like that. It's first hit. Imagine how much different your strategy changes when it's the first person to be hit versus killing them. And the tried and true deathmatch, of course. One of my personal favorites is capture the flag. Yep. I'm saying flag, but it could be, you know, capture the gnome, right? There's a gnome on each side and you gotta pick it up and carry it or something.
That's funny.
There's a whole lot you can do with that beyond just the traditional bloodbath, you know, just surviving. Mm-hmm. Maybe you win just by not dying and, you know, all these hazard, maybe they turn a wild beast loose that's too strong and the whole goal is to not die. Like, that to me is a great way to add to a grand melee or a team match, right? Just chuck a big, giant, dangerous monster in there, and your whole shtick is, how do I hide from this thing for, you know, 10 rounds? You got to survive for 1 minute.
Yeah, just throw Grotzt at him. Fucking some throw a Demon Lord. It's like, they'll be fine. They're like level 6.
Throw in the Remoras.
Jonathan Reese in the comments has a really good point. He says he's had his players fight altered versions of themselves, like a paladin of a different oath, etc. I think that's a really cool way, too. You could do a mirrored image battle, right?
That'd be a lot.
Where whoever the group has to fight alternate versions of themselves, you know, themselves if they had chosen a different path or something, which I think is a really, really cool to do that. But once again, there's lots of different sort of objectives you could do. Maybe one is to blow up the enemy, you know, fortress. You know, it's a big giant arena. In each side, you have your own little fort, and you each get an orb that has the fireball spell attached to it, and it blows up after it's placed on an altar after a round or something, giving enough time for the other group to get in, grab it, and pull it off of there. So there's a lot you can do, and I think that's probably one of the best ways to spice up an arena is just to change the victory conditions instead of just straight up death matches.
Instead of just kill that guy. Everyone can do that. But we can't forget the most important thing and why it is a gladiatorial arena to begin with. The crowds!
Ooh,
aside from
cheers,
the
yeah.
dangers gladiators face in the ring, there are dangers outside the ring, too. Include the crowd as much as possible. A crowd in the throes of bloodlust can be every bit as rough as wild as a wild beast, and if angered, they might fling rubbish onto the field. Maybe there's a stone that cracks a guy in the head. Distract gladiators with insults, or pluck an unwary warrior off the field and rip him apart in the stands. Gladiators learn that appeasing the crowd is important to fighting as well, because a crowd won over can be a useful ally if things go bad. A simple way to include this is to use performance checks and to treat the crowd as a layer action that affects the battlefield based on a disposition. Now, we all kind of recommend using the Bless and the Bane spells to start, because it's kind of very simple to use. But of course, you can be as complex as you want. Maybe like a cure wounds, someone throws down a piece of chicken, and you're like, oh yeah. and of course, something along those lines.
Or probably inspiration.
Inspiration. That's a good one too, which might foreshadow into what we were talking about later. Yeah. If some of the characters aren't in the match, you can have them roll persuasion checks to work the crowd in the allies' favor as well. The chanting of the crowds, the stench of sweat, blood, and fear, and the howls of the dying fill the arenas of the Dungeons & Dragons world. With these tips, the players will cheer the encounters like the crowds of the arena. At least we hope so.
Yeah, I want to touch more on the crowd thing, because I like that you pointed out that Bless and Bane is a really good way to do that. It's super simple mechanic, and there's a clear benefit, a tangible benefit that the characters can actually see, making it take a front row to the game. I also think that you can change that to any variety of different features that you want or mechanics.
Oh, yeah.
As Austin mentioned, making it a lair action, maybe if somebody is, you know, not so got the crowd hates them, they're starting to, lob stuff, that maybe that poses, does some sort of damage. Maybe somebody in the crowd shoots a poison needle at them, so now they have they're poisoned for a round, or they got to make a save or a poison for a round. Oof. You know, little things like that would really make for fun and interesting play. And I wouldn't be surprised if a wizard just turned and tried to fireball the crowd if they were not having a good day.
Better hope that the barrier's up, because whoo.
Ooh, Jonathan has a good point here. He says you could make it a boon for crits or fails.
That's a good one.
Ooh, I like that. So, like, maybe you increase the crit range from, you know, a D to just a straight 20 to like an 18 to 20 while they have the crowd's favor. Ooh, man, I like that. That's really good.
I like that too.
I like that.
It's a good one.
Do you guys got any, there's another thing you could do too. I talked about this on our, for our bonus episode for our patrons, and it's about having a scale. Like factions have scales. So, the disposition could start as neutral, or maybe it's a little higher, a little lower, depending on how long they've been in the arena. So you really could say, okay, I'm going to have, five levels of disposition, neutral, and then the crowd likes them, or the crowd loves them, or the crowd doesn't like them, or the crowd hates them. And so you could even change that Bless and Bane boon to scale the die. Mm. So if they get, you know, at a neutral, they get no benefit. At a like, they get a D4 Bane, right? But at a, you know, a love, they get a D6 or a D8. Or at a hate, they get a D8. I mean, a D8 minus roll to your stats.
Pretty heavy.
That's going to suck. So you're gonna go out of your way. And the biggest thing I like about this is we mentioned persuasion. It also should be performance or performance and persuasion goes a long way. But the performance should be a big focus of it because, first of all, it's a feature that a skill that doesn't get as much use.
Yeah.
And I think that this would be a good chance to let it shine. So.
It's also, I think, a background for like the gladiator. There's like a gladiator-styled mm-hmm. background, so maybe yep. you can use that to your advantage as well while you're doing this gladiatorial kind of encounter setting.
Right, right.
So,
you know, now I feel like I gotta build one. I gotta build a nice, good gladiator combat for our patrons.
That's kind of like that with my battle royales that I ran here and there.
Yeah, you've got notes on those. You just send those to me. I could probably do something with them. Overall, is there any? Never mind. is there anything you think that we should talk about that we didn't cover in our little tips here?
When you mentioned capture the flag, I actually flashed back to a time where in a Starfinder game, the players were kind of like as part of a ritual, forced to participate in a capture the flag style thing to see if they were worthy, if you will. And yes, melee combat was allowed, and guys could be knocked out, but me being like the spellcaster is like, I'm not gonna grab the flag and run back, I'm slow, I'm not very tough, I get beat up easy. So I ended up using spells instead to, like, screw with the enemy. Like, I cast grease around our flag and on the flag.
So as soon as they try to grab it, they slip and fall. I love it. Good. But that's the sort of stuff that makes that different than a traditional arena battle.
Right. And that's not something that would be a viable strategy per se in the straight-up combat fight either.
Right. So that goes back hand-in-hand with why it's important to include other victory conditions. So what did we learn today for our five big tips? The first one I have to say is your venue and your the gladiator's gimmicks. Mm-hmm. You need a environmental gimmick to go with your arena to make it interesting, right?
For sure.
During the gladiatorial matches, make sure that you include monsters, traps, and hazards, such as catapults.
Yeah.
Capitalize on group tactics in team battles. The arena should change and evolve during battle to get the most out of this, so the team's strategy has mm-hmm. to change, right?
Ooh, use a catapult to launch the fighters at each other.
That's actually pretty good.
I like that one.
Like... The wizard readies like burning hands or something. All right, pull the trigger, and he flips and then lets it go. The grand
melee crunk.
There should also be for grand melee include roleplay and politicking and building alliances to bring down bigger foes, or you know encourage you know the poisoning and cheating inside the arena to gain the advantage. I feel like rogues would really be have a lot of fun with this. But don't always let them succeed. Let them do them checks mm-hmm. and see if they get caught. Change the victory conditions. Victory conditions. Don't do just a bloodbath. Make it capture the flag. Make it king of the hill. You know, different victory conditions just make arenas more fun.
Or like escorting a person of interest or like a payload. They gotta get
from one end to the other.
They gotta get there, and all these people are trying to get it from them.
Yeah, that'd work really well with that labyrinth idea you were talking about earlier.
Ooh, I just only thought of one where you have to play a game of keep away. We have like basically a ball, if you will, that will explode. So the two teams are constantly picking up and chucking it back at each other. Like, nope.
Blood score says catapult launches tigers, lions, and cheetahs into the arena.
Pretty good.
And then last but not least, include the crowd as much as possible. They are just as much of what makes an arena exciting as everything else. I mean, yep. If I was to run one of these, I would totally want to have background audio cheering, you know, of an arena going on. Maybe even have one or two buttons that are like, oh, or boo, you know, to add to it. I'm sure you can find those on the internet somewhere. So with these tips, the players will cheer the encounter like the crowds at the arena. I think that'll do it for our main topic today. 5 tips for running gladiator arenas. Hoot, hoot. So do that. Before we move on to our other tips and tricks, I just want to let you guys know that we have 3 brand new products out now. The Werecat playable race. Oh my gosh, it has been flying off the shelves. Everybody loves it. Check it out. You got the Cleric Warmind if you're into playing more of the psionic builds in a course. Who doesn't like to touch an enemy and send them falling in the wrong direction with our Skybreaker? Each of these are available at CritAcademy.com for just $1.95. We're cheap.
Try to be.
Yeah.
And now, what you've all been waiting for, our Unearthed Tips and Tricks segment, where we bring you new and reusable material for both players and DMs.
Ian has taken up our character concept today.
The character concept today is definitely a bitch dish best served cold. Revenge! Blood is bound tallowed this day. I warrant it will be yours. And this entry, by the way, does come from Dragon Magazine. A rare few gladiators enter the arena to right a wrong. As usual, as it sounds, sometimes getting down and dirty in the fighting pits is what is needed to get back at the people who have crossed you. To such a gladiator, fighting in the arena is a means to an end. The target of hatred might be another pit fighter, someone who works the games, a patron who keeps a stable of gladiators, or a raving fan of the sport. A gladiator's vengeance is driven by something that may, well, cause him to resolve a dispute after a single-body match. Another might ravage the enemies financially or emotionally first, perhaps defeating the target's personal champions one by one. Such a careful plotter only faces the real foe once everything else has been taken from them. Yeah.
Ooh, I like this. So I like the idea that somebody's, for whatever reason, has a vendetta against a particular person, and the foe, the person they're seeking revenge on, all their income comes from gladiator arenas. So going in and destroying and taking out and killing every single one of their prize fighters is undoubtedly one of the best ways to not only crush them emotionally, but financially, turning them into something worse than death, a pauper. You know? What do you guys think about this?
I'm always down for a good revenge story. It's all I ever live for. I just want some guy to get what they deserve, man. It's good.
You know, it just occurred to me that if the arena is a big enough venue and enough people are brought in, maybe they may have an insurance policy because guys are so expensive to train in the first place. Yeah, he just died. All right. Bring a revivify.
I didn't think about that. Yeah, in this world of magic, and death can sometimes just be an inconvenience. So if they die, they're just like, all right, we got this guy on staff. Put him in.
Yeah, but bringing somebody back alive, though, is expensive.
Yeah, but it doesn't mean it's not impossible.
So you would have
That's why I said if it's a huge venue, that brings in a lot of money.
Yeah, that makes sense. Then they might be able to... That sounds like... I feel like I watched an anime or something where it was a lot of that and they just died temporarily. Anyways, I think that'll do it for the Vengeful Gladiator. Our monster variant today is the Battle Scarred Veteran Gladiator. That's a mouthful.
Yep.
Now you're probably sensing a trend.
I would hope so.
No.
Oh man.
So in order to make this veteran gladiator, you're going to start with the Aranos stat block. The lost features are going to be damage and condition immunities. It's going to lose its telepathy. It's going to lose its magic resistance. True sight, multi-attack goes down from 3 to 2. So what are the new features you're going to give this new gladiator of yours? Well, how about we give it veteran experience? When the gladiator rolls a 1 or 2 on a d20 for an attack roll, ability check, or saving throw, they get to re-roll it, but must use the new roll.
Yep.
Somebody got an upgraded lucky feature, mm-hmm. Or luck feature.
I'll say.
We're also going to give them tactical insight. They're so experienced and used to combat. When the gladiator finishes a long rest, it rolls 2d20s. The GM records the numbers rolled. The gladiator can replace any attack roll, saving throw, or ability check made by a creature that it can see with its tactical insight rolls. This sounds familiar. The gladiator must choose to do so after the roll, as its tactical insight allows it to predict the best course of action, but before it knows the result. Now, each tactical insight roll can only be used once, and when it finishes a long rest, it loses any unused tactical insight rolls. Does that sound familiar to you guys?
Now, is it only you imposing it on them, or he can just choose any?
Okay. He can choose. So it's very much the wizard's portent ability. Okay. But I had to change it up a little bit to fit the thematic of the gladiator. Right. But basically, we're passing off its experience is, oh, I roll these two dice. Okay, I've got a 4 here, and I've got an 18 here. Well, I know that exactly what he's going to do, and so I'm going to parry it. He gets a 4. Yep. That's pretty much
it.
That's
cool.
And, of course, we're going to give them legendary actions, because I love me some 3 legendary actions. Mm-hmm. 2 for the attack. That makes up for the 1 we dropped away, right? And then we're going to give them tactical awareness. If the gladiator has already used its reaction, it can roll a d6. On a 5 or 6, it regains the use of its actions. If you don't know, the origin creature that we used has a parry reaction, increasing its AC by 3, I think. So there's a potential that its AC will be able to be increased more often, but for one attack. Not super useful against multi-attack, but can definitely reduce the incoming damage from a target. So what do you guys think about this?
It's pretty good. I like it. This is like a fun, like,
good rework.
Humanoid boss monster that's like just like... Because I can imagine just like, oh man, I rolled a crit, and then the gladiator's like, but I parried it. And you're just like, the player's looking at his hands like, huh? What do you mean? Right. It's like, yep, it's actually a 4 now. Sorry.
Yeah, that's a terrifying and annoying ability when the players have it, so I don't mind giving it to a monster.
Right. So I think that it works well. Like, he just has all this experience, so he's like you can just say like, oh, you just think it's a for sure hit. You know that if you just strike right this way, there's no way he could possibly guard it. But just somehow the gladiator just knows that you were about to swing that way, and he just parries it, and he's just like, what? But I rolled a 20, and you're like, you did roll a 20. It's a 5 now.
Yeah. It reminds me of, I don't know, in Phantom Medicine, you know, we, spoiler alert, Qui-Gon Jinn dies by Darth Maul.
Oh man, I can't believe it. I didn't know.
In follow-up, I think it was in Rebels. Was it Rebels? That,
yep, it's in Rebels. I know what scene you're talking about.
Obi-Wan is fighting, Darth Maul. And Darth Maul tries to use the exact same move that he used to kill Qui-Gon. But because of his experience, Obi-Wan kicked Darth Maul's ass. So,
I was amazed how short the fight was, too. But it was awesome.
Right? It was awesome. It was a very great callback. But anyway, so that's kind of what I was trying to capture here. I want to thank my patrons and the Patreon community, who kind of helped me come up with some of these mechanics for it. You guys are awesome. I'll have the uploaded file for you guys early next week. So I think that'll do it for our monster variant, the Battle-Scarred Veteran Gladiator.
The encounter of the podcast is no-named. We forgot to, but that's okay. I'm just gonna start it. We'll figure it out once we figure it out. Dakauda Thrawn, a female elf noble, has ordered House Arryn to take a more active role in the conquest of the region. Unfortunately, Lord Jared Arryn, I don't know why that name sounded funny to me, a human spy, homelands are rife with House Varen supporters. You have been asked to sneak into the home, study, and plant a small orb imbued with the arcane eye spell. You will use this will allow House Arryn to find Varen sympathizers easily and bring their piece of the region under control.
Yep. I like this.
It's very simple. It's very short, but
I didn't write a book.
It's more of just like a stealthy kind of mission. However, that does not mean it has to stay as a stealth mission. As I imagine, if you test a good few paladins with this, they're going to be like, we're going to do this a little bit diplomatically. Oh yeah, how's that? I'm going to tell them if they don't allow us to do this, I'm going to smite them.
Aggressive negotiations.
Housekeeping.
Housekeeping as a man with full plate walks in through the door, sword and board on his back.
I think in order for this to really work properly, is it would need to be a stealth mission, just because
for sure
once you break in and kill people, they're gonna want to know, probably want to know what else is going is wrong. Mm. But sneaking in and dropping something off as a very stealthy spy-ish mission, they're less likely to notice anything out of the ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's mostly the goal here. I don't think this is something that necessarily has to be done with the entire group.
For sure.
I totally can see giving the responsibility of sneaking into the area to one of the stealthier people, but then having the other players kind of support that character by reporting, you know, where the guards are patrolling.
Oh, like they're staking out. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. So there's more you can do with that. And maybe you add a little bit more of detail of why it's bad if they get caught.
Or they could pose like as like a building inspector, or if there's like at least one bard in the party, the bard could just simply say, "Hey, I'm a bard. I'm here to entertain," and use it as an opportunity to slip it in there.
I've been watching this thing on YouTube where these guys try to prove that they can get into anywhere with a ladder. So they just walk into like theme parks and movie theaters with a ladder, and it works. So I totally,
like, every time
I would totally buy that.
So honestly, that really has changed my whole view on a lot of things. Like, it's like, it really is just that simple. You just have some like easy uniform on, bring in a ladder. Not many people question you.
You just walk with intent.
Yeah, is it
high level deception?
Exactly. You just I know exactly what I'm trying to do, and they just don't do it.
Who's gonna question a couple guys carrying in a massive ladder? Like, there must be going somewhere.
Yeah, clearly something is broken, and if you work there, you know something is broken. Nothing's always fixed. There's always something wrong with wherever you work, no matter what.
Wonderful.
Oh, yeah, he's fixing the AC. Oh yeah, that's Jerry.
Yeah.
Or just wave at people. Hey, what's up, Sammy? And just wave in a general direction. Somebody there would probably wave back at you.
Yeah.
I think that'll do it for our encounter of the podcast, I Spy.
As we had named.
See what I did there with the arcane eye? Yeah.
Yep. Our magic item today, lightning bullets. Ooh. It's a net, and it's uncommon. This unique and small net has weights intertwined with it on its ends, making it easy to throw long distances. In addition, the weights tend to wrap around a foe, restricting their movement. The unique design of this net allows its range to increase to 40-60 feet. As a bonus action, you can speak the item's command word, and lightning springs from the net to deliver a shock to a creature touching it.
Oh my.
Nice. The target must succeed on a constitution saving throw, or take 2d4 lightning damage. And it can't take reactions until the start of its next turn. On a successful save, the target takes half damage and can still take reactions. I think we actually need a DC for that, but other than that, we're good.
Hey, Austin.
Yeah?
Hey, Austin.
Is that what I got caught with?
Does that sound
familiar? Is that what I got caught with back in the superhero campaign? Because I was like, this sounds really familiar.
It's called something else, but I just basically gave it a more fantasy name for this. But yeah, you're right.
Really,
there's
funny.
No... There's no DC. I need to fix that. DC 15 if you're curious. What do you guys think?
All right.
It's very simple. And I agree with it being uncommon. Like, it's just it's almost like those lightning manacles you gave me one time. That I put out a boss. I was just like, hey buddy, no move. Don't take that off. Why? It'll hurt. I've seen a man fry to death with these.
Yeah.
Oh man, that's funny. I like it. It's just a very DC 15. I think is totally fine. I mean, realistically, like the 2d4 doesn't do a whole lot to most things.
Yeah.
So I mean, I think it's totally fine with where it's at. Especially even for uncommon. Like, if you would have said rare, I would have been mad.
Yeah, well, not quite that bubbly,
yeah.
But the best part is it makes the net a more viable option to use in game.
Yeah.
Because the net doesn't get as much love as it should.
It really doesn't. But what can you do?
All right, that That'll do it for our magic item, Lightning Bolas.
I really like that one. That was a good one. Our Dungeon Master tip, though, is Arena Quests. I wonder why this came about.
Wow, that's weird.
Wow.
It's out of the blue.
As with any adventure, those centered on arenas should have a quest to involve the entire party. Unless you use a heavy-handed force the adventurers to fight for their freedom, which, admittedly, some players don't like that, which is fair. Arena adventures have a hard time keeping the characters involved. Thus, building quests for your players requires finding ways to keep them invested in the outcomes of particular duels and matches until the situation is resolved. For example, we got a few here. Cheating. The characters might investigate a particular venue to follow tips on suspicions of cheating. Cover. The arena might conceal a sinister enterprise involving cultists, criminals, or possibly a political uprising. Missing people. Missing people are disappearing all over town, never to be seen again. Looking into these vanishings, they discover a criminal ring drags them to a distant location where they fight in actual death matches, whereas this arena might not. Wherein they, maybe they pride themselves off that, where they're like, no one dies here, we don't allow that. Murder. Wow, almost like that's typical in fantasy, but hey, I mean, it happens in arenas too. Each day, for several days, gladiators just turn up dead, and not from the fighting in the pits. The sponsors fear their stables are going to be wiped out, which obviously, if you can maybe garner some help from these sponsors, maybe they'll offer a nice little reward on top of that.
Yeah. In one of the adventures I ran for our patrons, this was one of the things that happened where all the demi-humans were being preyed upon and carried off to a city to be, you know, tossed in this fighting arena. So mm-hmm. It makes for a much more interesting quest than just, hey, you're a slave, you start here.
Yeah. I like the idea that it's, I mean, I think the missing people one, where people get dragged off into, like, these distant locations, it offers them to kind of, like, they you know, take their time at this gladiatorial arena, and now they have foreshadowing to go elsewhere, to take this different route to what's after this arena. Well, clearly these people are being dragged off elsewhere. We should go there. Maybe it's towards like an important city and maybe it all lines up. Maybe that's how your DM is pseudo railroading you. It's like, oh, you guys see this arena. Also these people are being dragged off to the main city that keep telling you guys about and you should really go there.
What do you think, Ian?
Definitely a few angles to cover. And I even thought about how whoever's doing the kidnapping, for example, might cover their tracks by hitting them with a polymorph spell, turning them into animals, or
that's really smart.
Changing their appearance. So shit, nobody realized that they're the ones who were being killed in the South Arena.
That is like very smart.
I could totally see like having like a single passage that that's got guards and stuff, and every day They're the guys, you know, this guy walks by every day with wheelbarrows and he's like, hey, Jim, how you doing, Jim? He's like, who's that? Oh yeah, you'll get used to him. He comes by every day. Yeah, he always has a wheelbarrow. We always suspected he was smuggling something, but every time we looked, we couldn't find anything. Turns out he was smuggling wheelbarrows. That's like polymorph slaves.
Holy shit. It's just a wheelbarrow. Oh, we never really thought about it. It comes in with a new one every day. It's really weird. every time I ask him, he just says he's cleaning the old one.
I do like the cheating is another good one, too, where somebody is, like, poisoning.
Mm-hmm.
Poisoning the gladiators or something, and you got to investigate why. So you have to survive long enough. But this also puts the players in player characters in a precarious position, because what happens when they get drugged up? Makes them an easy target. So, all right.
I really like all
I think
of these.
Yeah. Right. I think that'll do it for our Dungeon Master tip, the Arena Quest. Our player tip of the podcast is
don't be a dick.
I can hear my wife shouting. I'm going to be honest. I did not come up with this. It's 100% from Alex Baum, who will be joining us again on March 21st. Talk strongholds and followers. Turn a curse into a boon. Cursed items are often a huge threat to you as a player and your character. This comes in many forms, such as altering personalities, giving an adventurer one or more vulnerabilities, or maybe turning an adventurer's face into a horrifying visage so nobody wants to look at him. Poor bards, that would be wreck their whole, whole spiel.
Yeah.
Yep.
While these can seem like terrible curses and a huge inconvenience, don't forget that you can make these items available to your enemies. Whether it's through a sophisticated bluff, a brutish intimidation, or a more tactile, suave persuasion, you can find a way to convince an enemy to utilize a cursed item that can eventually greatly benefit the heroes in their adventuring career. If you know that you've got an item, like, for instance, the armor of vulnerability, mm-hmm. right, is a great example. It makes you have you're vulnerable to piercing, slashing, and bludgeoning, I think. If you could somehow polish it up and sell it to one of the big bads, how much easier is that encounter going to become?
It's going to be ridiculously easier.
The one I randomly thought about was, what if on your way to a group of thieves, you decide to slip of them a berserker axe? Now, that sounds like it might be a boon to them, but if they fail their check, they'll go berserk and attack the nearest creature. That could include their allies.
That's cool.
My immediate thought was the sword you gave Zorax. If I was just like, oh man, this good guy is really pissing me off. Hey, like this sword? Real pretty. Just touch it once. Just once. It's good. And as he touches it, his just body explodes in necrotic aura. He's dead.
I could totally see like you disarm him and then drop your weapon on accident. Mm-hmm. And so he's disarmed, has no choice but to pick up your weapon. Would really fit that really good too.
Be really funny. I probably have to roll like performance or something and be like, oh, I totally drop it. Sword, I gotta grab yours, and then he's like, fine, I'll grab yours, and he's like, oh my god, my hand's burning.
Shit.
I'm surprised, Justin, you did not once mention Warbreaker during this player tip. The book.
Yeah, I didn't at all. Is there a particular part you're talking about?
Nightblood, the sword?
Yeah, okay. Duh, I'm an idiot. That's actually the weapon he's got was edited to based around that. Where, yeah. If you guys don't know, because we're talking outside, in Warbreaker, there's a sword that basically kills people when they grab it by sucking out their evil, I guess.
Yeah, it kind of just eats their soul.
Their life force. It devours their breaths, which is like their souls. And it's very cool. It's also in Way of King, Stormlight Archives,
too. Yep, in the Stormlight Archives. Yep. Yeah.
Yep.
God, Stormlight Archives is so good.
Oh my god, yes, dude. Like
Brandon Sanderson. I keep doing you.
I just found out that I've had the book and I've listened to the audiobook, but there is a graphic audiobook where they add sound effects and voice actors to all the people. So, I was like, I'm going to go get this, but like part one's like $100. I'm like, shit. That's not the book. That's part one of mm-hmm. the first book. I was like, shit. Anyways, so I think that'll do it for our player tip of the podcast.
Don't be a dick.
And you can avoid dickitude by turning a curse into a boon. Before we close out, we have another gift to give away. Compliments of our generous sponsor.
A Night at the Tavern from Starshine. After a long day of adventuring, nothing beats a night at the tavern. A Night at the Tavern focuses on all of the activities that can be found in the tavern. From services such as an accommodation and recruitment, to traditional tavern games such as Shove a Haypenny and Smite. I can also use some like gambling and darts, for that matter.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in this product. Who's our winner?
Our winner today is WernerClote@gmail.com. I do not know how to pronounce that last name, so I'm sorry if I probably butchered it. Didn't win? No problem. Head on over to CritAcademy.com and subscribe for your chance to win.
Nice.
Yeah, do it. Do it now. I'm really excited for next episode. Hopefully you'll join us next Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern. here at YouTube or Facebook or wherever you're watching from, we will be joined by the D&D influencer Game Master Craig. Together, we will be discussing 10 alternative ways to use inspiration. I'm really excited for this one.
See, I told you inspiration would come back. It was all foreshadowing.
Yeah, right. We hope to be an inspiration to you. See what I did there? If you enjoyed the show and you want to support us, please visit CritAcademy.com. Check out our Patreon page. We got lots of goodies, lots of maps and encounters. Follow us on social media. Leave us a review. We have all kinds of lots of good content. Please follow us and subscribe on YouTube. We just passed 800 subscribers, so I'm super excited. It's going up a lot.
Yeah, we have like, a lot of like really short, like maybe 1 minute videos that you should really check out. They're really easy, quick to use, like tips. Just give it a go.
1 minute Dungeons and Dragons tips.
And they're all great.
Yes, because I'm awesome. I am your host, Justin.
I'm your co-host, Austin.
And I'm your co-host, Ian. Thanks for listening.
Keep your blades sharp and spells prepared, heroes.
Keep your blade sharp and spells prepared.
You bastard.
You didn't say anything! There's like a long pause there, so I just kept on going.
We'll just edit it out in post. So they'll be like, I gotta choose one, but I'm gonna choose Ian.
Is that somebody's cat being tortured?
Yeah, it's Ian's cat just popping off.
And he's yelling next to the mic, Lily.